Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Hello, my name is Glenn Gaines. I am the Deputy U.S. Fire Administrator for the United States Fire Administration. And we're talking to you today about several issues that we believe that are important for the American Fire Service and all first responders that are faced with change in the season. And I think because of the change in the season, this particular time of the year, we know for certain that in the coming 3 months, that being December, January, and February, are the most at-risk months for fire fatalities. I want to take just a moment and talk to you about the U.S. Fire Administration and the four elements of the U.S. Fire Administration, what we do here. And then I want to introduce Kathy Gertzner, who will be talking about a new program that we've rolled out recently to assist the firefighters, fire departments, fire organizations out there to better prepare for these most serious 3 months that are coming upon us. Well, the four functions, the National Fire Academy probably is the most visible. Each year, we train about 8,000 fire service future leaders here on campus, and over 100,000 online. I would encourage all that have not taken advantage of the National Fire Academy opportunities, both here on campus, out in the states, and of course, with our online programs, to come to our website, go to NFA section of the website, and take advantage of that opportunity. By the way, we'll be talking with Kathy later. I would encourage you to visit our website at usfa.dhs.gov, where a lot of the information that she is discussing will be available. The next is where fire departments from across the country report. We are now near 22,000 fire departments are reporting to the National Fire Data Center. It is recognized as one of the largest fire data systems in the world. There's a lot of information there that can be downloaded or viewed by fire departments. We need to do so. We also publish reports out of the information that we receive from the National Fire Data Center, and those are transmitted through our website and through our listserv process that we have here at USFA. The third leg is the public fire education piece where Kathy resides. In fact, she is our program specialist that leads that effort. And we'll let Kathy talk about that. And then the last, the number four element of the U.S. Fire Administration is research, where we issue memorandums of agreement and contracts with research firms to look at the national fire problem, study new technologies and new programs that may assist fire departments in and organizations in addressing the national fire problem issue. My job here, very briefly, is to manage the day-to-day operation of the national U.S. Fire Administration and each of the four elements, and work directly with our U.S. Fire Administrator Kelvin Cochran on a day-to-day basis to ensure that we are responsive to our constituents and that the work here at U.S. Fire Administration is operated in a coordinated, effective, and efficient manner. I want to now at this point introduce Kathy Gerstner. She has been with the U.S. Fire Administration for 22 years and currently serves as the USFA's public, leads the U.S. Fire Administration's public education program. She has held this position now for 10 years. Ms. Gerstner served 6 years in the National Fire Data Center, so she's very attuned to analyzing trends in terms of fire loss and fire fatalities and fire injuries. Her past includes positions held as an education specialist at the National Fire Academy and at the FEMA's Emergency Management Institute, and both has materials and radiological emergency preparedness training programs. She also taught kindergarten and was a substitute teacher at the Frederick County, Maryland school system. Ms. Gershon was born in Washington, D.C. and grew up in Maryland suburbs. She graduated from University of Maryland with a bachelor's degree in education. And she currently resides in Fairfield, Pennsylvania, just northwest of Emmitsburg. So, Kathy, thank you for being here, and also thank you for all the good things that you do for the United States Fire Administration.
Thank you, Glenn. And thank you, Peter, for the opportunity to talk about USFA's newest fire prevention campaign called the Install, Inspect, Protect campaign. This campaign was launched on October 28th with the help of Administrator Kelvin Cochran and 19 campaign partner organizations. The campaign is asking everyone to help protect themselves, their families, and the firefighters who help save lives by installing and maintaining smoke alarms and residential fire sprinklers, by practicing fire escape plans, and performing a home safety walkthrough to remove fire hazards from the home. A little background as to why we chose this particular theme for this campaign. As you're probably aware, the U.S. Fire Administration tracks fire fatalities on a daily basis. More than 3,000 people die in residential fires every year. Many of those deaths have been linked with homes with no smoke alarms or no working smoke alarms. We feel that it's critical to continue to communicate the message about smoke alarms and sprinklers because we know that the risk of dying in a fire is reduced by 82% when smoke alarms and sprinklers are in the home as compared to when neither are in the home. A residential structure fire occurs every 79 seconds, and according to the NFPA, between the years of 2003 and 2006, almost two-thirds of home fire deaths resulted from fires in homes with no smoke alarms or no working smoke alarms. So we have developed this campaign. It's actually a revision of a campaign that was called Tribute to Heroes that was launched in 2002. We've updated the materials, and we've added information about sprinklers. There are three calls to action. One is to install and maintain smoke alarms and sprinklers. Two is practice fire escape plans. And three is to perform a home safety walkthrough to remove fire hazards from the home. You can find information on the campaign at the USFA website, www.usfa.dhs.gov/smokealarms. Materials included in this campaign are talking points, fact sheets, posters, print public service announcements, radio and television PSAs, a four-minute educational video, a community PowerPoint presentation, a state-by-state smoke alarm requirements guide, sample news releases, pre-written articles, and talking points, as well as coloring and activity sheets for children. You can find all of these materials on the website. You can also order a disc, toolkit disc for the campaign, and it's free of charge. You can download all of these materials from the website for free. Fire departments can use these materials in many different ways. There's something really for almost everyone. Remember that they're free to print, to hand out, and to present to citizens throughout the community. As members of fire service, you can incorporate the campaign materials and messages into your existing public education materials, or you can use them as is. The campaign fact sheet is a perfect document to circulate to residents. Show the four-minute educational video at community meetings. During your team's elementary school visits, children can draw and name their smoke alarms with the smoke alarm coloring sheets. And otherwise, I guess you could be creative with how you use the materials. You might want to use the talking points the next time you're interviewed by the press. And we have pre-written articles that can be inserted into newsletters, newspapers, and...
Yeah, Kathy, this is Glenn. I wanted to also encourage the firefighters and the fire chiefs out there to engage the local media. And by that, I mean the printed and the electronic media. These PSAs, especially the verbal PSAs, play very well, especially during commuter time. And a lot of the local stations are very happy to have that kind of information and to link to the local fire department. And so I would encourage you to do that. The all of our printed information is camera ready and can be easily inserted into a publication. So they need to keep that in mind. I served 37 years in Fairfax County Fire and Rescue, and many years I served out on the line in operations in some of the busiest stations and busiest battalions. And one glaring statistic that comes out time and time again is that most firefighters that are injured in residential fires. So it is not only an issue for the people we serve, but it is also an issue for our firefighters to reduce the numbers of incidents, and then when these incidents do occur, mitigate the impact of these fire incidents. It also follows along with fire fatalities. If you look at operational-based fire fatalities, most of them are occurring in residential structures, and specifically in one- and two-family structures, which is why we fully support the installation of residential sprinklers. And as you all know, there's an effort across the country for fire departments to support the installation of residential sprinklers and the new ICC code that requires, at local option, the installation of residential sprinklers in all new one- and two-family homes. Well, once again, I want to thank Kathy for being with us today and remind everyone to access our website at usfa.dhs.gov, where you'll find a wealth of information for you to use in your community, your city, and with your organization. I also want to thank Firehouse.com for being our host today and for the tremendous support that they provide to the American Fire Service. So signing off for now.
Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Training and Tactics Talk, a podcast focusing in on training and tactics for today's fire service. We're focused on making sure everyone goes home, and we want to give our firefighters and fire officers on the street the best training and tactical information possible. I'm Douglas Klein, the host. I'm a training commander at the High Point, North Carolina Fire Department, and I want to invite you to tune in to Training and Tactics Talk monthly. You can get there by going to radio.firehouse.com. Stop by and check out what's new in training and tactics at Training and Tactics Talk at radio.firehouse.com.
All right, joining me now is Mr. Rob Neal. Rob serves as one of the deputy superintendents for the National Fire Academy here at the U.S. Fire Administration in Emmitsburg. He is responsible for development of curriculum aimed at improving the professionalism of America's fire service. Prior to his current assignment, Mr. Neal for 6 years managed the National Fire Academy's technical fire prevention curriculum. That fire prevention curriculum trains the next generation of fire prevention and mitigation leaders from the, from the very basics all the way up to strategic management. Rob also served as a fire chief in Whatcom County, Washington, and also has served as a fire marshal, code enforcement, public education, and all the things that are involved in fire prevention and fire mitigation. Rob is viewed from our point of view as a critical member of our senior management team here at the National Fire Academy and as a part of U.S. Fire Administration. He would not admit it, but I will tell you he's an innovator and a leader and a critical member of our staff here and has a lot of been directly responsible for a number of new programs and mechanisms to better train and educate and prepare our future fire service leaders and those that are out there on the front line. So, Rob, thank you for joining us today, and talk to us a little bit about some of the exciting things that are going on at NFA and what roles you play.
Well, thank you, Chief. And you're right. There are a lot of exciting things going on right now at the National Fire Academy, almost too many to list, but we'll see what we can do. I think the first thing that is probably most significant for us is in our most recent reauthorization from Congress, they finally granted us the full authority, if you will, to work in the field of emergency medical services and start expanding our training there. And, of course, that's a huge potential market for us in terms of training. We've always worked around the edge of the EMS, but we never really had the congressional mandate and authorization to do that. And now that we do, we're going to open the floodgates and we're going to make things happen. And the most recent thing we did with that is we had a one national meeting of leaders in EMS delivery and development from around the United States who came in and did what we call a national needs analysis. They began to identify for us what sort of training and education needs might be really important for EMS managers. You know, obviously we're not going to get into the business of teaching people how to set broken arms or slip combi tubes or anything like that. That's for the field folks. Our job is going to be able to help those folks manage those skills. So we brought in a national group. They looked at our curriculum. They made some recommendations, and we're in the process of preparing a report. Then coming in March, we're going to take that first report and send it around to another group and ask them to more or less validate it for us. So that'll be a huge, huge step for us. In the meantime, we're already developing a new course that in emergency medical services on quality assurance. That was a big request from our students in the last couple of years and a very hot topic, as you might imagine, in the field of emergency medical services. Make sure that the quality that the patient receives in the field meets all protocols, meets standards, and meets all the legal requirements. So we're working right now to develop that course, and it's in development and should be out for a pilot here in not too distant future. Another thing we're working on, not necessarily related to EMS, but overall in our curriculum, is we're really looking to update all of our courses. We have an ongoing process. This past year, we've updated most of our more popular courses, particularly our Leadership 1, 2, and 3 series. We've expanded those with new scenarios, and we've added some EMS components into that as well. We just recently issued the pilots of Health and Safety Officer and Incident Safety Officer, so they're out on the field and available for us. We're doing some tweaks to the Executive Fire Officer Program, freshening up some of the scenarios and some of the activities in that, as well as for those who listeners who are EFO candidates and are familiar with the 360-degree self-assessment program, we are now having that available to us online. So students who get into the EFO program will be able to assess their own skills as well as have their coworkers and friends and family assess what they do to become our future leaders. We also have just finished the updates on the MCTO-D, the Management Company Officer Training Officers course, and so that's out, and pretty excited about that. Another thing we're working on is a thing called Easy Training, and this is an initiative for us that's very exciting. We've recognized that many students, particularly those who like to look at NFA online or find other online training, have a difficult time finding meaningful training on the Internet or on the World Wide Web that they can use. And part of that is simply the sheer number of pages that are on the net and trying to sort through what's meaningful and what can be useful to them. So we're working with our state training partners, and we've created this project called Easy Training. And the ultimate goal is that we will push short 10 to 15-minute chunks of training out to local jurisdictions through the state training offices, And they'll have a website or a web link available on their own home web page that they will take one click, get it to the easy button training, and within a few minutes they'll be able to get the short video and training presentations on a variety of skills associated with firefighter survival and safety and operational success. Along with that, there will be some record keeping that will go along with it, and it will be able to help us understand what sort of the training needs are that are out there in the country. We're piloting that right now. We'll be in pilot with five states and about 10 other local jurisdictions over the next 3 or 4 months. And once we get that out and operational, we're very excited that that's going to continue. We're partnering with the National Association of Fire Training Directors. We're partnering with the Maryland Fire Rescue Institute. And, of course, the Fallen Firefighters Foundation are playing a key role in that. Some of you may be aware, or Chief, you may be aware of something we have called coffee break training. Now, every week we put out a little training vignette. It has something to do with some sort of fire protection topic. We're actually in our fourth year on that. And that's been a very successful program. Our original goal was to reach about 5,000 subscribers, and we passed 34,000 this year. So we've really grown it. Tells me that there's a huge need out there and huge demand for training in the fire prevention area. Now, along with that, and that's really important, fairly significant in the past year here, is we now offer continuing education units for all of the courses that we deliver, as well as for the periodic coffee break trainings that come out. Now, this is important to those firefighters and allied professionals who need to have some sort of continuing education to maintain their certifications. A lot of states require firefighter and fire officer certification, and so by getting these continuing education units that we issue, they can apply those to that. So that's been a real value added that we provide. Of course, all of our courses have always been evaluated by the American Council on Education for college credit. This just adds more value that they can do that. Another thing we're working on this year is we're really aggressively trying to recruit new and real competent instructors. For a number of reasons, our instructor cadre has dwindled over the last couple of years. And we recognize that in order to maintain a fresh perspective on our courses and keep our delivery current with our new audience, that we really need to have more instructors. So people who are listening to this podcast, that, you know, if they have an interest in becoming an instructor for the National Fire Academy, they need to let us know. If they go to our website, www.dhs.usfa.gov, you'll find that there is a link there on contract instructors. And we've tried to simplify the process and make it as easy as possible so a person can jump through all the appropriate hoops to become an instructor for us. So we're always looking for good people. This year in our course developments, we focused on a couple of things. We're spending a lot of time looking at our two-day courses and our six-day courses, which continue to be very popular. A couple of those, if I may, kind of give you some of the titles that we're working on. We've just finished the second pilot on a course called Forensic Evidence Collection. This is in the arson curriculum. It's a six-day resident course, and what it does is it partners the field fire investigator with the laboratory tech. And the ultimate goal is to provide the ability to collect good evidence and make sure that it's maintained in accordance with all laws and protocols, so that when it ultimately goes through the crime lab and is introduced into court, that there's no question as to whether or not it's the integrity of that evidence has been maintained. I talked a little bit about the EMS quality assurance class. We're moving forward on that. You mentioned earlier the International Residential Code vote on residential sprinklers, and in response to that, we're actually developing two-day courses. One is a course on how to conduct plan review and inspections of residential sprinkler systems, and the other is a two-day course on how to overcome public misconceptions and resistance to sprinklers. So we're very excited about those opportunities. In our resident deliveries, we've got some new courses coming up. A new one that we just piloted is called Hot Topics in Fire Protection. This is kind of a current events class, and the idea is that students will bring in issues that are important to their jurisdiction. They'll do research while they're here on campus. They'll prepare a report and share that information with their other students. We're using that as a model for a variety of curricula. We think if it's successful in the fire protection technology curricula, it'll be portable to some of the others. So it's a pretty exciting opportunity for us. Also, we're creating a new course on special hazards and highly protected risks. We find that there are a lot of students who are very familiar with building codes and fire codes and what to do with the materials that they find in there. But what do you do if somebody comes in and presents the proposal for a nuclear power plant with a daycare center on top of the cooling tower? Obviously, that's a little hyperbole, but some things are just outside the scope of the codes. And so we hope that students will be able to take those special hazards and highly protected risks, develop some strategies, and be able to identify what they can do to solve that particular problem. In April, we hope to release a six-day sprinkler, standpipe, and fire pump plan review class. That'll be a off-campus or a regional delivery. We've received a lot of positive feedback from that. We've piloted it twice, and we'll have one more pilot before it goes out. We also are in the middle of working on an advanced life support response to hazardous materials incidents, again, to kind of commingle our EMS courses with some of the hazardous materials training that we offer here on campus. So, as you can see, there's a lot of stuff going on. I've just kind of scratched the surface of what we're doing in new courses. And if people have questions, they can certainly give us a call and find out what they need to know.
Thank you, Rob. There's, I think, Dennis O'Neill, who is our superintendent, and I know many of the senior staff of the National Fire Academy. They use a phrase, we offer training from 10 minutes to 10 days, and I think that captures pretty much what we're saying, what Rob has been discussing with you. They're working very hard to ensure that we bring training right into your computer, your home-based computer, or into your training academy, and they also are working very hard, as Rob mentioned, with our state fire training directors, understanding the economy and how difficult it is to take time away from home or from your work and get here to Emmitsburg. We would love to have you here, and we encourage you to get here and become a part of the student body here at the National Fire Academy. But the NFA Online is a great opportunity. I mentioned to Rob the other day that I spent time taking on one of the new scenarios, the simulations that they have online, and I found it rewarding, challenging, and interesting at the same time. So I would encourage you to give that a try, for those of you in operations that especially are aspiring to the command level or currently in the command level, very challenging and informative. Well, I've asked Rob to continue to stay with us. We have a special guest that we've asked in, Ms. Joanne Boyd, who is an admissions specialist, and she works over in the admissions office in our student services section. And the job that she has is to manage the process of accepting applications and processing them through to the leadership of NFA and other parts of the National Fire Academy to complete the selection process for accessing our many training opportunities, which include both online classes held at state fire academies across the country, and, of course, our residential classes here in Emmitsburg. Now, Joanne has been with us now for 22 years. 18 of those years she spent with the National Fire Academy working with contract instructors and with the staff, scheduling the presentation of courses and getting personnel through those. She also spent some time in the procurement office, so she has a real good sense of what operations are managed here at U.S. Fire Administration from a holistic standpoint. She currently works for Omni, which is one of our contract partners here at U.S. Fire Administration, overseeing the daily operations of the NETC, that's the National Emergency Training Center Admissions Office. So I want to thank Joanne for being here, and I ask you, Joanne, just to take a few minutes and talk about for our audience out there, what are some of the keys to gaining access. When you're filling out one of these forms, and I think for the most part they're online, if I'm not mistaken, what are some of the mistakes that many times our applicants make when they fill out a form? But I think more importantly, what are some of the key things that our audience should be aware of when they're filling out these applications?
First of all, the application form is online and is available there, and we also have the top eight tips for completing a successful application. Lots of times we receive applications that are incomplete for various reasons. Could be missing signatures or missing course titles or course dates, but the main thing is block 16, and that's a very important block, and the information in there we rely on. The application or the applicant needs to describe what their duties are and how the course in which they're applying for is going to benefit them. We receive applications in the admissions office for the National Fire Academy two times a year. The enrollment periods are October 15th through December 15th and April 15th through June 15th. We strictly adhere to the application deadlines. Applications received before or after the enrollment period are rejected because the we're strongly encouraged to apply during those periods. Unless, of course, after the enrollment period we did not get the applications we need to fill courses, we compile a vacancy list, which is available on our website, and we then solicit applications. At the end of the enrollment period, the admissions office works with NFA to determine if courses do not have enough applicants that we may need to cancel a course, or because of high demand, we may need to add a few courses. After courses are added or dropped from the NFA schedule, the qualified applicants go through a random selection process. Any student who is deemed qualified but did not get enrolled in the class is placed on a one-semester wait list. We will call from the waitlist students in the event that a seat becomes vacant.
Joanne, you mentioned in your discussion there about the famous Block 16, where the student applicant needs to identify his or her skills that would get them into the class. Could you explain a little bit more what they need to do?
In Block 16, we want to know what student does that qualifies them for the class for which they're applying. I would strongly suggest that the student refer to the NFA online catalog and go to the course for which they're applying and review the selection criteria that is there.
How about their own individual skills, though? What would separate student A from student B in the eyes of admissions? And I understand that the people who are in admissions may not be familiar with the fire service, so they're basically going off what the student applicant tells them. So what would I need to do to sell myself as a candidate to the admissions office to get into NFA?
The admissions office staff rely heavily on the selection criteria, which is provided to us by NFA, and we look at each application against the selection criteria that was provided.
Would it help to include such things as my educational background, any special training I might have taken?
Sure.
Okay. So really what I think I hear you saying is having more information is probably better than less.
Yes.
So just saying that I'm a firefighter and I put out fires is probably not going to get a person into a class.
No. We want you to go into detail.
Okay. What about international students? From time to time, we have students here from Great Britain. We have students from Nigeria. We've had visitors from Russia. If I were a foreign student, say from Canada or another country, and I wanted to come, certainly this podcast is going to be broadcast globally. How would I get into the National Fire Academy?
Foreign applicants do not have to adhere to the enrollment period. We accept applications from foreign applicants year-round, and the same would apply. We would look at Block 16, match it to the selection criteria, and if they're qualified, we would place them in an offering.
Now, the training that we offer here at NFA, of course, is free. I mean, that's one of the great things about the National Fire Academy is it's free training. If we accept an applicant from a foreign country, do they bump a U.S. citizen to keep them out of the class?
No, we could place the foreign applicant in the course as an extra. It would not take the place of a U.S. citizen.
Okay, so we're not replacing anybody. We're actually adding on to that.
Yes.
That's nice. Can you tell me a bit more about what some of the most common mistakes are that people fill out on their applications or don't fill out? Maybe I think you mentioned earlier they forget appropriate signatures, maybe their date of birth. What else might be a common problem that would cause an application to be rejected?
The most common is the lack of signatures, either from the applicant or the applicant's supervisor. We would not reject an application because of date of birth. That is volunteer.
Okay.
Voluntary.
Okay, folks, I wanted to, just make a couple closing remarks and remind everyone of what we said earlier. Training from 10 minutes to 10 days, it's online, it's out in the States at your State Fire Training Academies. We are also on Twitter and Facebook. All of our information that's available to our constituents, whether they're interested in public education, research, learning more about the national fire problem, becoming a future leader in the American Fire or EMS service, come to our website, usfa.dhs.gov. We also take emails here at the National Fire Company and U.S. Fire Administration. So come to our website. There's a variety of ways you can get in contact with us, and we would be happy to provide you with the information. And the admission office also will be happy to assist you if you're having trouble with your application. Feel free to contact our main number here at U.S. Fire Administration, which is 301-447-1000 is the main number. So thanks again for dialing in, and we certainly appreciate the opportunity that Firehouse.com has provided for us.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to Firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.